Well, the world is dumpster fire, and nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good, and you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard. And today on the show, we have got Sarah McAdams. And I am so glad that you are here for this conversation today. And I'm going to be straight with you. I'm going to keep this intro short because I've been trying to record it for about an hour and a half now. And every time I just start choking up and losing my words. Because this episode is actually pretty special to me. I love talking tools with amateur brain mechanics. I really do. I love it when people give me some answers that I didn't have before. I think it's great. But I also started this podcast because while there are a lot of mental health podcasts out there, I wasn't really hearing a lot of conversations with people who hadn't figured things out yet. People who were just starting to come around to the idea that they might have something to figure out. And that's what today is. As always, I would like you to keep in mind that I am not a mental health professional. I'm a monkey with a toolbox. I have discovered a number of things that have helped keep me afloat in this great wide ocean of depression and bipolar. But, if you're really having a real problem, I highly recommend that not only do you talk to your peers who might also be feeling this way, because that can be wonderful, but seek out a professional. I believe that those two things in conjunction with each other can really help in ways that you can't even imagine. So without further ado, let's get into this conversation. But before we do, I do want to let you know that Sarah has a blog that you can go to. It's myrealsarah.com, and I highly recommend that you do because, as it turns out, she's a great writer. So check out the blog, go to the site, let her know that you heard about it here. Now, without any further ado, here's my conversation with Sarah McAdams. So first thing, right out of the gate, hi, how are you today?
I'm good. I'm nervous. I'm good. And I'm very grateful, actually, that you're giving me this opportunity. So thank you.
Well, I'm grateful that you're willing to share your story. But take me back a little bit farther. Let's get to know who you are first. First of all, where do you come from?
I was born and raised in Portland, Oregon. I've made a few different moves. I spent a couple years in Boston, a couple years in Columbus, Ohio, and now I am currently in Seattle, Washington.
Nice.
So I like to make a few changes every couple of years.
Travel really matters. Getting around and seeing new places, even if it's kind of staying in sort of the same general geographic area, there are different personalities and different feelings to different cities for sure.
Oh, I could not agree more. And all of them have offered like such incredible opportunities and people, and just, I am so grateful for every single one of those cities.
Well, what kind of kid were you?
What kind of kid was I?
Yeah.
Interesting. Depends on who you ask. If you ask my mother, for example, you might get a slightly different answer. But overall, I mean, the first word that comes to mind is athletic. Like, I was always on the go with a different sport or a different team. Grew up playing everything under the sun. Middle of five, I had three brothers, and then our youngest came along quite a while later. So pretty much it was me and three boys growing up, which definitely taught me a lot, made me the uber competitive person that I am today. And yeah, I mean, I think that kind of sums up my childhood in a pretty succinct way. It was sports, it was competition from day one.
What were your parents like?
My parents...
Busy, I imagine, that many kids.
Yeah, well, so my parents split when I think I was about 6 months old.
Okay.
So my dad remarried. Technically, two of my brothers are stepbrothers, and then my sister's a half-sister, but we have been together since I think I was about 3 years old. So we're just one family.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. But they definitely stayed busy, whether it was the kids or just their own activities. My mom, without a doubt, instilled my love of travel. Having just mentioned travel, she definitely taught me, like, yes, we work hard, but we also play very hard, which I'm incredibly grateful for. And then my dad actually taught me that, like, we work very hard. So they had very different personalities, without a doubt. And us kids got to learn a lot from both of them, for sure.
What was your school situation? Because I mean, you're playing sports and things like that. I imagine that you probably had, friends and people.
Yeah. My school situation, public schools the whole time. Mm-hmm. I ended up moving to Boston actually to play basketball for UMass Boston.
Nice.
Which was, so much fun. I'm also an avid Red Sox fan. Happy opening day for the Red Sox, at least. It's pretty much a holiday for me. So moved out to Boston to play basketball out there. But like you said, growing up in sports, friends and teammates were the exact same thing. I mean, my life was sports. And to this day, the people that I'm still close with from my childhood are people that I played on a team with. You go through a lot with your teammates, and it definitely creates a bond that lasts a lifetime.
So what was your upbringing as far as conversations around any kind of mental health issues? Because I know certain things can come up as far as being the child of a divorced household. I was the youngest in my household, and so I was kind of oblivious because my parents had already, I was the product of their marriage, so I didn't notice anything. And like you said, when you were very, very young, your parents had already split up. So, I mean, did that have any kind of effect?
That's a great question. And knowing that more than likely my parents will hear this, I'm trying to be very careful.
I understand.
Probably not the best thing to do. We're having this conversation so that I can tell my story and be honest about it. So, it was very clear from the get-go that my mom also experienced a lot of mental health issues. I would probably argue that my dad does too and chooses not to acknowledge them. But as far as conversations within our house, they didn't exist. It was definitely a sweep it under the rug family.
Yeah. Why do you think that is? Do you think that was more or less just, was it particularly religious, or was it more of a working class kind of stoicism?
Definitely working class. There was no religion growing up. Mm-hmm. It's a good question why it was like that. With my father particularly, work came first no matter what. So, emotional conversations, not particularly his thing.
Yeah.
With my mother, her and I actually just had a talked about this a little bit a couple weeks ago. And I said, like, we're not a family that talks. That's not something we've ever been.
Right.
And she said, I feel like we communicate really well. Which was crazy to me.
Yeah. It's a way of, it's a way of kind of shutting the conversation down. Like, I think
you're
we communicate fine.
Absolutely right.
Okay.
Yeah. And I, and we all have our different definitions of what good communication is.
Yeah.
So her and I clearly differ on that, but it just wasn't, it wasn't a family in which I, at least I can only speak for myself, felt comfortable sharing how I felt. It was very much, you know, just stay in your lane, get your things done, turn 18 and get out of here.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a harsh way to put it, but, you know, there was so much going on. My mom's trying to raise two kids. We're running around like crazy people. She has a lot to do, and I didn't want to be a burden is what it ultimately came down to.
Yeah, I can relate to that. Yeah, that was always a thing growing up for me, which was not wanting to be a problem. I certainly was a problem, in a lot
of
ways.
Me too.
Yeah. I bet. So in the process of getting yourself into the headspace where you're kind of in charge of managing your own day-to-day operations, you're in charge of making sure that you're not infringing on anybody and that you're operating at the highest level that you can. Where was the first realization for you that it wasn't going to work out that way to keep going that way?
The first time I ever remember thinking something seems off, it's actually crazy how clear it is to me. I was in seventh grade. I was in Spanish class, senior revet, and it was the first time I ever physically harmed myself so I didn't have to feel an emotion. And that continued to an extent to be a common thing, but instead of what most people, you know, think of when they think of mental health and physical harm, instead it became going to the gym or playing a sport or getting some sort of workout in so that I was physically doing something and therefore my mind couldn't focus on the emotion.
Oh, yeah.
The first time it became like overwhelming, I need help, I was 19 and I had just moved back from Boston to Portland.
And what did that look like?
That looked like, that was the first time I ever thought, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm tired and I'm an emotion that at that point I probably couldn't even really articulate, but ultimately is depression.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to get out of bed and I just didn't want to be alive anymore. And so that was the first time I ever wrote a suicide note. That was the first time I ever thought, I'm just not going to do this anymore. And it was also the first time that I went to a counselor.
Well, it's a good thing you did. It's funny, the things that you look back on when depression gets so strong and you realize that It's not really death that you want. It's
absolutely,
you want the feeling of wanting to die to go away.
Yes. Or you want to experience wanting to live.
Yes. Oh,
like,
man, that is so powerful.
I don't want to experience this life or what I feel right now. I don't want to end it. I want to end this feeling.
Right. And there can be a tunnel vision.
Pretty cool. And yes, tunnel vision for sure. Sorry, I just interrupted you.
Oh, no, that's okay. I think I interrupted you. So, you know, we'll just go back and forth with apologies until it gets better, I guess. Okay. But no, that's absolutely the case. It is sort of a tunnel vision because you're in a situation where your reality has gotten dire. And given the information you have and the life that you've lived up to this point, it's like you're trying to do math with the numbers you've got in front of you without realizing that there are others out there. And so yes. It's A plus B has got to equal D because I can't see C anywhere.
Yep. Yes, you're absolutely right. And when you're in that mindset or, you know, when you're seeing that tunnel vision, and that's such a good way of putting it, it is so hard to see anything else. I want to say it's impossible to see anything else.
Yeah.
And you can have people say like, it gets better, or you are worthy, or whatever that trigger might be for you, and all you hear the words, and that's all it is. It's just words. There's nothing else behind it. And yeah, that's that tunnel vision that I get.
I'm playing sports. Have you ever broken a bone?
Oh yes, many.
So you know what that feels like. I like to tell people that when they're trying to talk to somebody who's feeling a level of suicidality and they're saying all of these things about, this is what you should be thinking about. This is how you will feel. These are the people that you're going to affect. This is how much better it's going to feel later. It's like you're talking to somebody who just broke their rib and you're trying to tell them how much better it's going to be. But the pain is very real right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to say, you know what? You're right. I probably will feel better. I'm just going to take this rib, put some dirt on it, and, you know, get on with my business. Thank you so much for telling me how much better I'll feel later. I wasn't aware of that. It's tough because as a person on the outside of it, I've had people in my life who are experiencing feelings like that. And the way that you have to handle it is however you've got to handle it. It's a tough thing to tell somebody, this is what you do when somebody is feeling this way, because mm-hmm. there's not a one-size-fits-all solution. The thing to remember in any case, whatever it is to really try not to get wrapped up in your own fear of the danger that the person that you love is in, or the person you care about is in. Try not to get wrapped up in your own fear of the situation that they're in, and really listen. And then if you can do those things, you can probably help a lot more effectively, because there are certainly times where you reach out for help and the person is not necessarily helpful, but only because out of love they're and fear, they're doing the wrong thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they're trying to fix it.
Yes.
Out of love.
Right.
And
yes.
You could be at a time where you're not ready to fix it. And that's where I was just a couple weeks ago. I'm honestly probably still in that space of, I'm not ready to fix it. I can't think about after the broken bone. Right now I'm trying to survive.
Yes.
Right now I just have to continue to put one foot in front of the other. And at some point I'm going to break through that wall and I will be able to work towards bettering the situation.
Mm-hmm.
But for now I have to survive.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So for not having had a history of dealing with issues like this, who was your first person to reach out to for help, if I can ask?
That's a good question, because it depends on at what point in my life I was. So, you know, 3 weeks ago, it was one of my coworkers. I've known him for 7 months. I haven't known him for long. But in that 7 months, we have established a strong enough relationship that I wanted to tell him how I was feeling. And I knew when I told him I want to end my life, he was going to say, no, you can't do that. I won't accept that. And there was a part of me that said, well, don't do it because he's going to be super angry when you do it.
Yeah.
But I just didn't want to carry it on my own anymore. And that's what I told him. I said, I'm sorry that I told you this. I made a conscious decision to do it, but I am sorry I told you this because this puts you in a really poor position.
Yeah.
But I just don't want to carry it on my own anymore. And he responded and said, you don't have to. And now looking back on that, I think those were probably the most powerful words he said to me that entire week. And will be something I use in the future if I ever get to be that person for someone. You don't have to carry it on your own.
Yeah, it is a very difficult burden to hold all of that in, because the depression that comes along with that is it's like a weighted blanket that you're carrying around. And it colors the perception of all of your movements, of all of your choices. And it's not even necessarily always from an external source. Sometimes it's just a perfect storm of things that just feel a certain way, regardless of the external.
Yeah.
So for you, were there any kind of external forces that were playing into this that you're aware of now?
I was actually aware of them then as well. There wasn't a big trigger. There wasn't a fight with someone. There wasn't job loss. There wasn't a massive trigger.
Right.
But one thing that, as I kept saying that week, was a sign that this was the right thing to do. And this really speaks to where your mind can go to when you're in that deep, dark depression.
Mm-hmm.
Was three different things. One, I knew Thursday morning was the last dose of medication I had. And the idea of calling a pharmacy and reordering that was just exhausting. I also knew Thursday morning was the last coffee I had. I was going to have to go to the grocery store and purchase more coffee. And I couldn't fathom doing that. And then the third thing was just, I was out of groceries. And again, like when I'm outside of that now, those are three very simple tasks.
Yeah.
Making a phone call, going to the grocery store. But I was in such a dark place that not only did just the energy not exist, but I was seeing that as a sign. Like, this is the right time, because everything just lines up. It's your last, you know, you're almost out of coffee. You're going to take your last prescription. And it was those tiny, tiny things that said, yeah, the timing is right.
And now that you know this about yourself, now that you're kind of confronting it sort of head on, have you had a lot of thoughts about how you might respond to yourself moving forward? Because it's kind of a tricky situation when you get honest with yourself about having maybe even a different problem than you thought you did.
Mm-hmm.
It's a difficult place to find yourself in, because ultimately you're the one that has to put forth some effort on fixing it. I mean, you're the mechanic. But when you go and see a therapist, or hell, you watch a YouTube video on some things to try, or you read some books, all of which can be worthwhile. I recommend actually doing all of that if you can, but if you can't, getting some tools in front of you to say, all right, let's try this and see if that works, and reassessing. That sounds like something that you might actually be kind of familiar with, being sort of a goal-oriented person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and looking back on it now, it's very easy for me to see that is not logical.
Yeah.
That being out of coffee does not equal ending your life.
Well,
but when you're in it,
no.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just making a horrible joke about that. That's.
Oh, let's hear it, please.
Yeah, no, being out of coffee isn't a good reason to end your life. Well, as a person who always sees suicide as an option, whether I want to or not, I'm like, well, I mean, I've heard worse decisions. There are times when I wake up in the morning. And I think to myself, you know, I could get out of bed, and I could brush my teeth, and I could take a shower and go for a walk, or I could kill myself. I could I could make the coffee, or I could kill myself. Those are things that come to me because I have a chronic suicidality. It's kind of in me all the time. And I've learned to sort of think it's almost funny in a way. It's dark, but in a way it is kind of funny that it presents itself as a solution to problems big and small. It's like, do I want to have to go to this meeting at work or just jump out the window?
You know, like, I could not agree and understand more.
Yeah.
And I've actually never heard anyone else say that, but that is what goes through my mind.
Yeah.
And I think, oh, I don't want to go to this meeting.
Yeah.
I could just end my life.
Yeah.
And that, again, like when I look outside of the feelings that I have, that's not a logical response. If you don't want to go to a meeting, don't go.
Right.
I mean, or quit your job, or there are so many other options that are not ending your life.
Yes.
But when you're in it, it doesn't always seem like there is another option, or the other option is just simply exhausting.
Right.
You started listing like, well, I can get out of bed. I can get dressed. I can take a shower. I'm like, I'm already tired. Just hearing you list them, I'm tired.
Yeah.
And living your life like that isn't amazing. It's not super fun when you're just constantly exhausted.
Yeah. Yeah. And it can be very exhausting. The thing that's so tough for people who don't feel like this, for people who don't understand what this feels like, I completely empathize with their plight when they have to deal with us. I totally understand, because one of the things I think that just about every sort of situation you can find yourself in can be improved with better information. And so having better information about your own wiring, about knowing the way that you're set up, having better information about how to talk to people, about the way you're set up, and about how to start making some changes to help you better navigate. Those things are all very important. And so I think that it helps when people know, for example, that when you've got depression, or you're experiencing a deep depression, one of the things that people are taught to say is they're taught to tell you that you're not a burden, you're not a problem. When the real answer to that is more complicated, but the real answer is harder, it's scarier, it's riskier. And the real answer is maybe you are kind of a burden right now. But the flip side to that is that's okay. I don't mind that you're a burden right now. I don't mind that this is hard for all of us. It's because let's face it, when you're feeling this way, it sucks. You don't want to feel like this any more than you want to tell other people you feel like this. So the elephant in the room is it's going to be a bummer, but it's a bummer that everybody wants to get through. But nobody wants to say it that way because it's scarier to say it that way.
And sometimes when you're in that depressive space, I think it can actually be helpful to say it that way.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you just need to have that blunt honesty. So when I, because I mean, that's the exact conversation that I had 3 weeks ago. But I don't want to be a burden. You're not a burden. Yes, I am.
Yeah.
Of course I'm a burden. You should be doing so many other things than showing up to my apartment right now because you're afraid of me being alone.
Yeah. Yeah, that honesty can really help. But also being honest with yourself, being honest with yourself about the situation and having a little empathy for the person who doesn't quite get it because they're afraid. It's a weird situation to be in, to be the person who's hurting and having empathy for the person who's there to help take care of you.
Yeah. And it's also fascinating because I've experienced depression my entire life.
Yeah.
That's all I know. And it blows my mind that there are people that don't experience it.
Yeah.
Like I can't imagine what that would be like. I wish for a day I could be in their mind. I could feel their emotions. Because I'll never be that way. So it's just fascinating to me to think there are people that will never have to experience depression, and that is pretty cool.
Yeah. It is kind of
great. I'm not opposed to that option.
But it is also sort of a superpower in some ways. I think that something comes with it. Typically, when you're dealing with people that, you know, have that unfortunate bit of wiring, a lot of times, it also carries with it an ability to see things in a different way. And so I don't want to necessarily say that, you know, it's awesome to be depressed because it's not. But there is something of value in it that you can use to help educate other people about suffering, about pain, about managing, about dealing, and really about happiness and joy and how wonderful those things are when they arrive. I mean, really suck the marrow out of those bones. It's because sometimes it's weeks, it's days, it's months, maybe even a year between feeling really, really good.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there is definitely something beautiful in that pain, which when you are not in the middle of a depressive episode is something I can 100% agree with. And when I am in the middle of a depressive episode, if someone said that to me, I would probably kick them out of my house.
Yeah.
I don't think that'd go over very well in that moment. You want to tell me there's beauty in this pain, really?
So with what you're feeling now, knowing that depression is something that's been kind of omnipresent in your life and deciding to own that, has there been any kind of, let's say, reconciliation with yourself that this isn't something to get over or to get past, but find ways to live with?
Yeah, I think that's something that I accepted quite a while ago, and it's a continuous learning opportunity, which thankfully I love to learn. So just as you said, reading books, watching YouTube videos, whatever that might be, talking to a therapist.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be horribly painful all the time. It's never going to go away.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yes.
But it doesn't have to be horrible all the time. And what I have experienced in the, you know, last couple of years, I would say, is twice a year, I have a what I would consider a depressive episode. Mm-hmm. So every day I have depression, but then there's these 2 weeks out of the year where I just can't get out of bed, or showering is completely out of the question. There is no way I can stand in that shower for 10 minutes. And what I've learned is there's always a peak.
Yeah.
And if I can get past that peak, I'm going to be okay. But I have to get past that peak. There's always one day or night or whatever.
Yeah.
That is so, so hard. And if I can get past it, it's going to be okay. And that was the same thing 3 weeks ago. And I couldn't get past it.
Yeah.
Clearly I did.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking right now. But in that moment, it was like, no, like I know that at some point, because this has happened many times, there will be a peak, but it just doesn't seem like it's coming anytime soon. And I've accepted that, and I'm okay with that. And I think this is a good time to let it go.
Yeah.
And that's really, like, in that week, it was acceptance. It was an acceptance I had never experienced before. And it was scary. Like, I was scaring myself with my level of acceptance. Like, well, I'm out of prescription. I'm out of coffee. You know, I think it's just the right time.
Yeah. When your brain delivers you that message, I think one of the things to start trying, a thing you might try, would be to look at that as no more of a realistic option than training ferrets to play shuffleboard. It's kind of, you know what I mean? It's like, yes, technically that's a thing. Technically it's a thing you could do, but it's not a realistic option. And once you start seeing that as, this is just my head trying to remind me I need to pay attention to what's happening, and knowing that the cloudiness is going to come in, it's like, now's not the time to make any big, big decisions.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't agree more with that. And I think this episode was worse than any episode I've ever experienced before, without a doubt.
Yeah. What do you think made this one particularly bad? Was there something? Was it just a storm of things? Because I know that the situation happening around the world right now is not necessarily conducive to cheerfulness.
Sure. Yeah, I would agree with that. And it's such a good question. I honestly wish there was some sort of trigger so that I could say, well, I felt this way because this happened, and I just can't find one. I mean, I am searching for a trigger at this point.
Yeah.
and it just isn't there. And oftentimes when I'm going through an episode, there isn't really a trigger, but it also never gets to this point.
Yeah.
And so that was really interesting. The one thing that maybe could be a trigger is that I'm a little weird about numbers. Like numbers, I know that's a very broad sentence, but
no,
I'm just a little odd about numbers. Okay, I love it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to turn 28 on Friday, and I don't think I wanted to. I don't like birthdays particularly. I don't like birthdays at all, actually. My own. Others are fine, but I don't like being the center of attention. And no matter what expectation I have or how many times I try to tell myself I don't have an expectation, I will always be upset about something that happens on my birthday. And I don't know why, but it's just because birthdays are this thing we've made so important.
Yeah.
You feel obligated to go out. You feel obligated to be around friends. But what if you don't have a place to go out, or, you know, you want someone to reach out to you and they don't?
Yeah.
So I just dread birthdays in general. So I guess that's the one thing that comes to me and thinks, well, maybe that was the trigger. I just didn't want to have to experience another birthday.
Yeah. I can identify with that. I have complicated feelings about my own birthday. And I actually can identify pretty heavy with the idea of managing the day-to-day depression. But then, you know, when a real big dark one comes in, that's special. That's new.
Mm-hmm.
I had a pretty public, because I was doing this show, I had a pretty public kind of meltdown in between season one and season two of this thing, because I had a series of life changes all kind of happen at once. And I don't necessarily know what it was about that series of changes, but I hit a depression that I hadn't seen in over a decade. It was a rough one, and it was one that required me to rethink all of my coping mechanisms, all my tools. I thought I had solved it like a Rubik's Cube, you know, like I had done 15 years with no medication and just some occasional therapy, because I figured it out. I know what kind of person I am. I know what my triggers are. I know what my coping mechanisms are going to be when my brain delivers me these chemicals or this, that, or the other thing. I know all of it. I figured it out. I'm done. But you're never done.
No.
And there I was in the middle of the darkest depression, and my brain just would not function properly. So I got help. I started seeing a therapist. Therapist was helpful. And I started taking medication again for the first time in forever. And I didn't necessarily do those things the way that was recommended, but that's a whole other conversation. But I did those things. And then they both ran their course. The therapist ran her course. She was brilliant and wonderful. And I like to think that the course that we ran together was exactly as long as it needed to be, because once you start going to your therapist's office and your therapist is talking about their problems to you, you're probably mm-hmm. done. mm-hmm. You're at least done with that therapist. And it might be time to move on to somebody else. The medication, likewise, it kind of got me over the hump that I needed to get over that I couldn't get over on my own. But the important part was that I recognized I was in the middle of something pretty intense and pretty different from my normal. You know, once your depression starts to actually feel dangerous, you know when it feels dangerous. It's different for everybody. People do different things, but you know when it feels dangerous, and that is when you reach out. And you need to get some help, because clearly whatever you're doing up to that point, it's not enough at the moment. And there's no shame in any of that.
Absolutely. And especially, I mean, you saying, like, knowing when it gets dangerous. That is where I was. And I logically knew it was dangerous. I was making very conscious decisions. I was writing notes, and I was putting in an Amazon order, and I, you know, wrote down all my bank account information. It was very, I know this is going to be another burden to whomever finds me, and then to my family. But let me make it as easy for them as I can.
Yeah.
And in a situation that is not going to be easy, no matter what, it's not going to be easy. So let me do as much as I can to simplify it for them. And it was so conscious. I had specific letters to family members or to friends, but I wrote a letter to whoever found me. And I just said, I'm really sorry that you had to find me, and that sucks.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that sticks with me, but I can't, even now, I can't think of better terminology than that sucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it does. And I'm so glad that they didn't have to find me.
I think a lot of people are.
I think you're right. And that was a battle all throughout the week. I had told my one friend on Tuesday, his name's Jake. So I told Jake on Tuesday, we were supposed to go golfing on Friday, actually, for my birthday. And I told him on Tuesday, hey, I can't go on Friday. I don't think I'm going to be around. And he said, what does that mean? And I said, you know what that means. And that was my initial cry for help. That was my initial, I'm making a very conscious choice to end my life. The Amazon order comes on Thursday. So Thursday will be my last day.
Yeah.
And then he had to, you know, experience Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday with me. And I was a burden, and I am okay with that. And he's okay with that too, because he would much rather me be a burden for those 3 days than go to my funeral.
Yeah.
And it was interesting all throughout the week, because there was this battle. I don't know if you believe in a higher power, and of course, everyone that listens to your podcast does not believe in a higher power. Half the time, I don't know what I believe, but you know, whether it's God or the universe or just good versus evil, I felt this good versus evil battle inside of me.
Yeah.
And the evil was, you put the Amazon order in, you wrote the letters, everything is lining up, and the good was me still searching. It was me still asking for help. It was me literally Googling. Actually, I Googled suicide podcast. That's how I came upon your podcast in the first place. And the night before, I had Googled how to hang yourself.
Yeah.
And I was going through, and I saw one, you know, Google gives you a little synopsis.
Yeah.
And it said, the little synopsis said, my son Googled this too, and I'm sorry you feel that way. I'm sorry you feel this way.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I'm not going to click on that one. not giving me the information I'm looking for. And then the next night I Googled podcast and I randomly clicked on one because it said in all caps, the little synopsis said someone's name. I forget his name. And he was, you know, he was the popular kid in school. He was funny. He was this, he was that, he was all these things that I would fully expect someone to say at my funeral when people found out if I had successfully committed suicide. If they found out, they would have said that doesn't add up. She always just worked hard. She was always funny. She was always personable. Because it's not like depression is not exactly something you lead with. You don't say, hi, my name's Sarah. I'm depressed.
Yeah.
Even if you want to sometimes. But I ended up clicking on that podcast and listening to it. And you may remember her name, Moss Rogers, something Moss Rogers. Anne.
Yes.
You had a conversation with Anne Moss Rogers, and her son had committed, or had, she specifically said not to call it committed, had
died by suicide. Yeah.
And her son had died by suicide. And she talked about in the podcast that she has written so many different blogs and she's learned SEO, and that if you Google certain terms, her blog comes up.
Yeah.
And it was the search result that I had seen the night before.
I recognized it the moment you said it.
it was so crazy to me. It was like the night before I specifically was like, nope, not clicking on it. I see what you're trying to do. Not going to work.
Yeah.
And then I click on this podcast that I have absolutely no idea has any connection to that. And she's on there talking about it. So even though I tried not to acknowledge it, it popped up again. And that was the constant battle of there is good, and the good is me trying to find something to live for. And the bad is me making conscious decisions to end my life. And I feel like to the very last second that existed. And that ultimately somehow the good won.
The thing that I would like for you to take with you, if you take anything away from this conversation, is that it's okay to feel like everything is fucked up. It's okay to feel sad and depressed. It's okay to feel those things. It's okay to feel like there's no other way out. It's all right to feel like that. All of those things are normal things for a lot of people. There are certainly actions that are not okay. But feelings, thoughts, all that's just you. And you're okay. And you're going to be okay.
Yeah, I am.
So you don't have to worry about pushing those feelings aside or brushing them away or beating yourself up for feeling them in the first place, because that's not the problem. Coming to a realization that you feel like this, coming to a realization that you need something to change so you don't feel like this again, or you need something to change so you don't have this reaction again, all of that's all right. It's completely all right to feel depressed for no reason. You don't owe anybody any reasons. It's okay to think your birthday sucks. It's okay to have a really bad day. It's okay if you are a problem for somebody, because eventually you're not gonna be. All of this is just part of it. It's part of being alive.
Yeah.
And it's a weird, weird part of being alive for people like us. But it is part of it. And you can recognize it, allow it to exist, and to pass. Because it does. It always does. And when it doesn't feel like it's going to, always check in with someone.
Yeah, and I think those are words that people need to hear more often.
I think so too.
Me or anyone, I think. And part of the reason that I reached out to you is that now that I'm a little further past the survival mode, and I'm working on the, okay, how do I grow? How do I make it so that it's not twice a year I'm experiencing this? How do I make it so it's once a year I experience it?
Yeah.
Or, you know, instead of every 6 months, every 9 months, like anything I can do, how can I make that better? I'm also recognizing that I think the very most important thing for me right now is to, as painful as it is to tell people what happened.
Yeah.
Because when I don't, and what I've done for the last 28 years is I keep my mouth shut.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be a burden. And yet, and because I feel shame and I feel guilt. And those are not positive feelings. And if you do believe in God, shame and guilt are not of God. And yeah. So when I feel those things, I can fight them. And I can say, I'm not going to accept this shame. I'm not going to accept this guilt. I'm not going to let bad win out. Instead, I'm going to share my story and I'm going to own my story. And that's what I'm trying to do now is just own it. It's okay. And I don't have to feel guilty about it. And I don't have to feel shame about it.
I cannot even express to you how grateful I am that you reached out to share your story with people and that you're allowing me to do this. So thank you so much for everything, and thank you for being here to share that story.
Thank you. I mean, thank you. And to everyone that listens to this, it's like, you're not alone. You're not the only one that feels the way you feel. You, Chris, and I both just shared two different stories in which we have felt the exact same pain. And, you know, hearing that others have felt that way, it doesn't solve the problem. But my goal is just to help others feel like they can share their story.
Yes.
And hopefully that will make it easier. I think the one thing that I can say has already come from this is that every time I have shared my story, I have not felt any sense of relief.
Yeah.
Any sense of relief. But what I do know is that when I'm in that dark place again, I have a lot of people to reach out to.
Yes.
And so instead of, because, it, and like we both said, I am going to be a burden when I'm in that space, but it's a lot easier for me to be a burden across 10 people than for me to be a burden to this one person over and over and over again.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's the one thing that's come from it. Like I have cried every single time I have told the story. And I have walked away thinking, oh my goodness, why did I do that? And then an hour later or the next morning, I think, wow, it feels really good. It feels good to know that when I'm in that place again, I can reach out to another person. And I don't have to say, I don't have to explain myself because they already know. It's like I'm setting myself up for success in the future. I can say, hey, I feel sad right now. And they understand that that's a very serious thing for me to say. But I don't have to explain it all. Because sometimes when you're in that space, the idea of explaining it all is just too much to handle. And now I don't have to do that.
Thanks for talking to me today.
Thank you.
And there you have it. I can't even express the gratitude that I feel right now for Sarah's openness and honesty and willingness to share this story with all of us so that we might not feel so alone when we're feeling down. And if you want to get some more Sarah in your life, and I know that you do, go to myrealsarah.com. You can find links to her Instagram. You can find all kinds of blog posts. It is an excellent, well-written, thoughtful blog that I think would be a great addition to your life. And here I am just stumbling over my words. I'm having a hard time because I'm emotional. So until next week, and I cannot stress this enough, don't kill yourselves out there.